This video is made possible thanks to the support of my Patreons. If you would like to join my Patreon with the live streams, the Discord chat, exclusive content and more, then you'll find a link in the description box. Patreon is the most effective way of supporting me and my team in the work we do. So if you find the videos valuable in any way, then please do consider joining us on Patreon.
Most of you might not know it, but I actually have a job outside of YouTube. I teach French language, culture and politics to university students. And last year, one of my students turned in an essay answering the question, what are the challenges universities face with AI? And the essay itself, you guessed it, written unmistakably by ChatGPT. A perfect three-part structure, polished, generic and absolutely not their voice. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. I thought it was brilliant and depressing at the same time. Because in that moment, I realized this might be my future, spending hours grading AI essays, pretending everything is fine. And then I wondered, is my job becoming BS? Is AI the final blow in the long line of attacks against universities? In other words, is academia doomed? From what I've read and experienced, most universities and most departments are aware of the rising challenges of AI in universities, but the solutions to them vary. There's a spectrum from universities who fully bought into the idea that there is no alternative to AI and therefore pulled thousands of dollars into integrating it in their institutions for things like AI-based search system in Finnish universities, for example, meant to help with library research material, but got so many bad reviews that the vendor's Finnish subsidiary went bankrupt, and the universities were left with 500,000 euros in debt. Great, that is the AI future we want. And on the other side of the spectrum, you have universities that don't think the problem seriously enough. I call it a problem because AI forces teachers and academics to completely rethink the way classes are taught and assessed. Both teachers and students use AI in more or less ethical ways, leading to cases like Ella Stapleton, who was surprised to find that her professor had used ChatGPT to assemble course materials. Quote, "He's telling us not to use it, and then he's using it himself," she said. It's messy to say the least, but in all truth, AI isn't appearing in a vacuum. It's landing on top of a system that was already in crisis. Even before AI, universities were struggling, and for multiple reasons. Public funding cut to the bone, tuition fees rising out of reach, administrations acting more like corporations chasing investment instead of education, anti-intellectualism spreading across the political spectrum, and finally persistent elitism and a shrinking job market for graduates. These problems intersect. They magnify each other, and they are making academia less and less desirable. I find this worrying because, imperfect as it is, academia remains the center of production of knowledge and innovation. Such production requires time, funding without purpose, trials and failures. This doesn't necessarily comply with the productivist demands of capitalism, but that's precisely why academia still matters. AI deepened those issues we mentioned for multiple reasons, the first one being its cooperative nature. I don't think I'm bringing something new to the table by saying that AI is run by companies whose primary goal is to make profits and dominate competitors. So I think it's important to think about the introduction of AI in education first through that lens. For example, Trevor Griffey, a lecturer in labor studies at the University of California, Los Angeles, warned that tech firms could use AI deals with schools and the teachers' union as marketing opportunities to make students lifetime chatbot customers. This is the Happy Meal strategy. You know, in the 1970s, executive advertiser Bob Bernstein invented the Happy Meal with a little toy as a way to bring children to McDonald's and have parents invest in a full meal instead of small portions of this and that. Kids loved the Happy Meal, which meant that families would come back regularly and that when kids grow up and have a family of their own, they'd be likely to go to McDonald's as well. So the corporate AI takeover of education fulfills a similar goal. The point isn't necessarily to make kids and students use AI, most of them already do. The point is to make them use a specific AI brand, build a habit of using that specific brand and not a competitor. And as kids and young adults are often in charge of introducing family members to new technologies, AI corporations can grow from that. In the last couple of years, the amount of partnerships between AI companies and educational institutions has increased. A few months ago, OpenAI and Microsoft bankrolled a new AI training for teachers in partnership with the American Federation, a powerful teacher union, which said it will use the $23 million, including $500,000 from the AI startup Anthropic, to create a national training center. This announcement triggered some backlash as many educators, especially unionized educators, don't trust corporate AI for the reasons I've mentioned before. It's pretty clear that despite grandiloquent speeches on giving students skills and opportunities for the AI future, AI corporations don't seem to have education at heart. Powerful tech bros haven't been vocal about the defunding of education championed by Donald Trump. On the contrary, they stood by him, waiting for him to sign an executive order intended to encourage schools to, quote, integrate the fundamentals of AI in all subject areas for students from kindergarten through 12th grade. The scale of the AI takeover of academia has led academics around the world to voice their concerns. In the past week, I've read a ton of opinion pieces and articles published in mainstream media, the New York Times, Wired, The Atlantic, etc., on the topic of AI and academia in order to forge my own opinion. I like to take a look at those publications because they're all read by political and intellectual elites, so even if they don't get millions of clicks or whatnot, they have an influence over an audience holding powerful positions. So it's important to see what these people are saying. They do shape society. So I looked at what they were saying on AI and academia and felt like they didn't really answer my questions. On the one side, you have calls for a total ban on AI, which to me sounds unrealistic and detached from real life. You know, people use the technology, full stop. And on the other side, you've got academics practically cheerleading AI as if it's the second coming of Plato. That's naive, especially when we know AI runs on environmental exploitation, water hungry data centers, and the logic of billionaires. Eventually, I found an open letter which caught my attention. It's titled "Stop the Uncritical Adoption of AI Technologies in Academia." This letter has been signed by 1,129 academics, many of whom specializing in computer science. They argue that overhyped AI technologies such as chatbots, large language models, and related products are just that. Products that the technology industry, just like the tobacco and petroleum industries, pump out for profit and in contradiction to the values of ecological sustainability, human dignity, and pedagogical safeguarding, data privacy, scientific integrity, and democracy. These quote-unquote AI products are materially and psychologically detrimental to our students' ability to write and think for themselves, existing instead for the benefit of investors and multinational companies. As a marketing strategy to introduce such tools in the classroom, companies falsely claim that students are lazy or lack writing skills. We condemn those claims and reassert students' agency vis-a-vis corporate control. This term, agency, is crucial here. For most of us humans, agency is what determines our quality of life. If we feel like we have agency in our lives, at work, we're more fulfilled, more happy. Conversations around the use of AI in academia often revolves around the idea that both students and teachers are losing agency that gets transferred to AI. That's why I liked this open letter, because it talked about agency, and also because it seemed to recenter students in this conversation, to give them agency, to treat them as thinking beings instead of always, you know, patronizing them. So I got excited. I was like, yeah, finally someone has an answer, something that sounds realistic. And then I kept scrolling down the page and saw that one of their solutions to the problem is to ban AI use. And later they even say that they need to enforce academic freedom, which sounds like an oxymoron. Freedom? Enforcement? This is where it clicked for me. In all those opinion pieces, articles talked about on mainstream media, students' agency was only an afterthought, or even worse, was instrumentalized for different motives. That open letter was yet another confirmation of this. While I agree with most of it, the fact that it speaks about resistance against corporate control and students' agency, and then concludes that the answer to AI in academia is to ban and enforce, so to use authority against students, is contradictory to me. How is that reclaiming students' agency? How can you say you want students to have agency in one sentence and then resort to authority and punishment as a solution? That's why all those articles frustrated me. They're not honest about what's really going on. They claim to care about students and the ideal of academia, but what comes across is much more primal. It is the belief that, yeah, academia is doomed. It's academics' fear of losing their job and that their students don't get a job, making academics' jobs increasingly useless. And I get it. I did feel insulted when I read the essay I mentioned at the beginning of the video. You know, the essay on the challenges that AI poses in academia, for which the student had very visibly used ChatGPT. I felt insulted when the student did that because it made me realize how BS my job has become. And it's not easy to reckon with that. It's scary. The threat that AI poses for the current model of academia make people fearful for valid reasons, but the fear can prevent us from recognizing that the root problem isn't necessarily AI. AI amplifies something that has always existed in academia, but that few people dare to call out. That something already has a name. I am not inventing it. It's called the banking system of education. So what is that, the banking system of education? Well, it was conceptualized by scholar and educator Paulo Freire, and it's basically when teachers treat students like empty accounts where they just deposit information. In this setup, students aren't really encouraged to question and challenge or even connect the knowledge to their own lives. They're just supposed to memorize and repeat it back. Freire thought this approach was limiting because it keeps students passive instead of active participants in their learning. He believed that education should be more like a dialogue where teachers and students learn from each other and work together to understand the world critically rather than just storing facts. This, in my opinion, is the reason why current mainstream discussions around students' agency and the purpose of academia are kind of pointless, because they refuse to take into account the fact that students have been trained to be recipients of information, to be passive consumers instead of co-creators of knowledge, as Freire advocates. The fact that the vast majority of students turn to AI forces us to reckon with this reality we've been refusing to see for so long. I mean, who thought that students would immediately rise up to the AI crisis in academia when their contributions to that space are purposely limited? If education is a banking system, a transaction between a service provider, the teacher, and a recipient of that service, the student, then the service can be replaced. Students who haven't been encouraged to see themselves as agents in the classroom turn to bigger, faster, richer bank, Gen AI. That's why all these debates and discussions about banning or embracing AI miss the point, in my opinion. The real issue isn't AI, it's that students have been trained to see themselves as the recipients of knowledge, not agents in their own learning. As in many other areas, AI just exposed a weakness that was already there. But there is hope. If AI forces us to finally confront this, maybe we can finally change it. The answer isn't blaming students, patronizing them, or punishing them. It's empowering them, listening, taking them seriously, engaging with their ideas, showing them that academia is still a place for dialogue and agency. This is where thinkers like Freire and also bell hooks with her Teaching to Transgress become more relevant than ever. They remind us that the purpose of education is empowerment. Now, this crisis fosters division between academics and students who have become increasingly suspicious of each other. But this crisis can also be an opportunity to recognize our shared struggle and our need for profound revolution in academia. And if we're serious about saving academia, we need to heal those divisions, not just between students and teachers, but also between disciplines. For more than a decade now, academia has been painted as the home of the wokes.
Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
This accusation, while extended to academia at large, primarily targeted humanities, which people are biased to see as, you know, less important than hard sciences. In mainstream media, on social media, in academia itself, people joyfully joined along in mocking academia as being too woke and useless. We saw it play out recently with Charlie Kirk. You know, right after his death, many liberal critics published tweets and op-eds praising Kirk's many talents as a civil debater. Now, it's relevant for our conversation because Kirk would often go on college campuses to debate college students, a strategy used by the right to paint colleges as ideologically isolated and anti-common sense. According to Ta-Nehisi Coates, all that praising from liberal critics is the result of a, quote, pervasive worry among the political class that college students, ensconced in their own bubble, could use a bit of shock therapy from a man unconcerned with preferred pronouns, trigger warnings, and the humanity of Palestinians. So in that specific case, the political class obsession with academia being supposedly too woke and in need of reality check prevents them from honestly assessing Kirk's legacy, his beliefs, the words he used. As Coates concluded, quote, "If you would look away from the words of Charlie Kirk, from what else would you look away?" So that would be one topical example of how that academia is woke belief or obsession can be detrimental. Now, many people, myself included, have warned of the dangers of entertaining the claim that academia is woke for yet another reason. For years, we've warned that this accusation put on humanities is the Trojan horse of the dismantlement of higher education at large. And guess what? This is happening right now. Today, even STEM students have to be careful with the topics they choose, the words they put in their research proposals. Today, even STEM students are facing job losses because of AI. The truth is, whether you're in philosophy or physics, your future is at stake. So in the end, the question isn't just, is academia doomed? The real question is, will we stand together to save it? Because if we don't, knowledge will stop being a shared resource and only serve elites and corporate interests. But if we do, if we unite across disciplines, empower students, and reclaim education as a shared project, then academia can become what it was always meant to be, a space of freedom, creativity, and agency. That's it for me, that's it for today. I hope this was a convincing case. I hope at least it challenged maybe some of your ideas, beliefs on these topics. I'm super welcome to hear what you think about this in the comment section. That's where the conversation continues. I may not respond to every single comments, but I do look at them. It's very important to me as feedback, etc. So I'll see you down there. And yeah, if you enjoyed the video, please consider giving a like, subscribing if it's not already done. I would like to thank my patrons for their support. They help me produce those videos, especially when I don't have any sponsorships on them, which is the case for this one. I would like to say an extra big thank you to my top tier patrons: Nofal Shamari, Fred, Hong Ching Huang, Paul Louis Agenot, Patrick Button, Jeff Lee, Yilan, Taya Martin, Nick, Brandon, Jem Siddle, Ojwal, Pablo, Patrick Riley, Boris, Ria, Corey G, Tristan, Christopher, Yon, Donage, Alex, Manuel, Christopher France, and Perry. And thank you to the other ones who prefer to stay anonymous. As you can tell, I have a new background, which means I moved to a new place, so please give me a few weeks to adapt. I hope the image quality is good, I hope the audio is good. Ugh, fingers crossed. You do not want to see what is going on over there. I'm not telling you, it's a wine box. You know those like wooden box where you put like wine bottles. On top of it, you have my prompter, and the whole thing is resting on the corner of the sofa. This is the situation right now, but I promise you, I am going to invest in an actual tripod. I will. This is going to happen for the next one. I commit to that. I do have finally installed my mic thing, which I've had for a year now. It was just back home, and I was too lazy to travel with it. Now I have it, and it's so great. I love it. So yeah. The most important part is the videos, it's the ideas, and yeah. Anyway, that's it for me. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye!